Hey everyone, welcome back to Tiger Talk. It's Carney Ann Nassar, and I hope that wherever you are in the world, you are healthy and you are safe. Did you know that there may be more tigers in the state of Texas than there are left in the wild? Without any meaningful way of tracking the transfers of tigers and the breeding of tigers, there's no way for us to know for sure, but that's what some experts are estimating. Today, we're gonna talk with Noelle Almrud. She's the executive director of Black Beauty Ranch, which is a GFAS accredited sanctuary in the state of Texas. She's also the director of the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. And you have to ask yourself, why did the makers of Tiger King never reach out to Noelle or any of us in the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance community? The Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance represents all of the reputable accredited sanctuaries for big cats in the US, and they were completely omitted from the discussion. So I'll leave you with that question to ponder that, but let's get into some Tiger Talk with Noelle. You must be busy with
Yeah, it's been an interesting, just, you know, making sure our sanctuary, Black Beauty Ranch, is ready and
yeah. You
know, all of our protocols are in place. And then with Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance, just making sure that we're, you know, getting information out to our members and offering resources whenever possible and that sort of thing.
Sure. Now, when the announcement came Bronxu that they had a confirmed case of COVID-19 with their cats, how did that change? Like, did that change like what your protocols are at Black Beauty, or what, what's been like, has there been any discussion in the sanctuary world about what additional safety measures need to be taken, if any?
Yeah, I think it is specifically with Black Beauty. We had already taken safety precautions, and we always wear gloves when we're handling animals feed. And if anybody is showing any type of illness, normally they're either not here if they have a fever, or they're required to wear a mask if they're believed to be contagious. But ever since this pandemic has come about, we've taken even more safety precautions. And if you are have a fever or any type of respiratory illness, you can't come back to work till that's cleared up, just to be on the safe side. And then you know, we have non-human primates. So our primate team has been taking extra precautions from the beginning. They're wearing face shields and masks and gloves all the time, whether they're in the area or doing diet prep or enrichment prep. They've all worn those precautions. And now that this has come out that big cats can also get this, then our wildlife team has also taken those extra precautions as well. Just to be on the safe side, we don't know.
Sure. And even when you feel like you're being, like, this for me, in my own diagnosis, has been such a wake up call. Like, I look at all the times that, you know, I've just quickly gone to get some, you know, vitamins or something at Walgreens, or grab, you know, almond milk at Whole Foods. And even with social distancing, like, I noticed like people who are still in big groups and no masks and all of this. And I don't have symptoms that are really probably noticeable for a lot of people. Like, I've not had a fever. My temperature has never gone above 98.6. I have what, you know, would easily be mistakable for like very, very, very low grade, like allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the fact that we have a new puppy in the family, and I'm a little bit allergic to dogs, and that usually does just impact my respiratory system. So, it's not been noticeable to me. I just thought, oh, it's just a new puppy. So, that is like what scares me, is that there are probably so many more people walking around, like even if they're no fever, even if they don't really have any symptoms whatsoever. And now knowing that big cats are susceptible to it, and likely a lot of other animal species too, it seems like a very big concern for all of you.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're just taking it day by day. Thankfully, this is one of the good times that Black Beauty Ranch is so rural, that we're all spread out so much anyway. We're on 1,400 acres. So, you know, now we have the policy that all staff have to wear masks anytime they're in a vehicle with somebody else, or anytime they're in a building with somebody else. But for the most part, people are spread out on 1,400 acres working. So that's actually beneficial for us because hopefully they can't spread anything to anybody else.
Maximum social distancing.
We practice that every day.
Right. Like that was nothing new. Oh my gosh. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is just with this pandemic and with the likely economic crisis that is going to come with it, how sanctuaries are going to be tapped and probably stretched thin, not just because donors are tightening their belts, but because the breeders, because they're disreputable roadside menageries and all of those kind of fly-by-night facilities and ramshackle facilities that won't be able to weather the financial storm are going to be looking for places to dump their animals. Is that something that's been a topic of conversation in the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance and, you know, preparing for that eventuality?
Absolutely. It's something that, you know, definitely the sanctuaries are feeling the strain already on their bottom line. But it's obviously something that could come up with, like you said, animals just being dumped or people not being able to afford to care for them. And so, you know, BCSA or the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance already works with our members to help with any sustainability planning. You know, we offer conversations like that at our annual workshop, but it's something that we've always realized that, you know, sanctuaries need to have plans in place for these type of situations, you know, if something serious like this happens. Now, we do also have a rescue committee prepared that any intake requests that come in, we work with all of our members to try to filter those through so that they can get placed in reputable facilities.
Yeah.
If possible. So, you know, I don't know what would happen if several of these facilities shut down at once. You know, I never know how many animals we can absorb, but we did it a few years ago with that facility in Colorado, and there was over 200 animals that were placed, and they all got placed. So I think, you know, we could do it again. It wouldn't be easy, but it's possible.
Yeah. Well, there was just a news about some big cats in the Houston area, right? Was it the Houston area where they found some big cats and they went to a facility in Austin to?
Yeah, actually, I think that was in South Texas, I believe. I'm not sure exactly where, but I think so. Yeah, and they were sent to the Austin Zoo. And I don't know that anybody really knew that that was happening until after the fact. So I wish Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance had been asked. We would have been happy to place them at a reputable facility.
Yeah. Austin Zoo is not AZA accredited. Is that right?
No. Okay. No. Okay. And it has had a lot of issues in the past, too. You can do a search, you know, on the internet to look, and they've had some troubles over the past few years. I hope they're doing better. I hope they're increasing their standards. But from what I read a few years ago, they were not doing the best they could.
Yeah, they definitely had some animal welfare act problems from my recollection. Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate because, you know, in a situation like that where even if an AZA zoo gets called, like they're not going to keep those generic tigers. So they are going to call typically a reputable. Mm-hmm. You know, I was involved in a situation here in 2017 in New Orleans where a tiger cub was found chained in somebody's backyard in Baton Rouge, and the Audubon Zoo stepped in and got her healthy enough to be able to travel out to lions, tigers, and bears outside San Diego. So that's, you know, because they won't take generic tigers, it's good to know that, like, if they get to an AZA zoo, they're going to hopefully get to an accredited sanctuary. But I guess to be continued on that one. But so in terms of the Big Cat Public Safety Act, how are the sanctuaries using this new attention on the issue of captive tigers in America to try to ensure that that does gain more momentum and public awareness. I mean, Tiger King, you know, I have serious, like, I've spoken very candidly about my thoughts about that being a reality show, a contrived piece made just to make money rather than to help anybody or help animals. But it does appear to present an opportunity for all of us in this community to kind of ride that wave of attention and make sure that it ends up in a good place. So do you have any thoughts about like what people are doing to make sure that this kind of does end up leading to an eventual Big Cat Public Safety Act signature and getting signed into law?
Yeah, I know that with BCSA, I just did an interview, yesterday with a reporter who's doing an article on the Tiger King issue and how it didn't portray the correct message. And one of the questions she asked me was, is there any good that's going to come out of this? And that's what I pointed out is, you know, at least it's got people talking and hopefully it's raising awareness so that people who had no idea that, you know, the underbelly of this industry, now they know about it and hopefully we'll make better choices and hopefully we can get more support to help pass some of these laws, not only the Big Cat Safety Act, but legislation in other states as well, too. And, you know, I also did an interview Wednesday with a station in Houston because they wanted to check in on the tiger we took last year from Houston. And then they asked me, you know, well, how is this Tiger King thing, you know, how has it affected you and what do you think about it? And again, I was able to talk about the work we're trying to do in Texas, which, you know, for four legislative sessions, we've been trying to pass laws to ban the private ownership of these wild animals. And so, you know, I was able to speak again about it. So hopefully that's the good that can come out of it, even though it was done with a sensationalistic viewpoint, you know, maybe it'll get people thinking that, hey, maybe people shouldn't have tigers as pets or in an unregulated facility. So, you know, we can only hope and we'll keep pushing it individually and as BCSA as an organization.
Yeah, I think it's so important that those of us who are doing the work have conversations over and over and over and over in on all platforms and all different mediums, because it's if the public is only getting the messaging from the other side, if they're latching onto that, they're going to miss the most important part of the whole thing, which is the abuse and exploitation of tigers. And I'm glad to see that there are reports coming out, like the New York Times article that just came out about why Tiger King is so problematic and not blackfish for tigers. Mm-hmm. Laughable even to suggest that. But I think that it does present an opportunity if we keep having those conversations. And luckily, I think probably we've all been doing a lot more media work lately with the interest in this issue across the board. I'm about to have a Skype call with the Wall Street Journal here in a couple hours. And, you know, it's every spectrum of media has its eyes on this issue right now, which I feel like is now our responsibility to make sure it gets steered in the right way. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we were thrilled to see that the hits to our website have gone up over 1,000%. Since this came out. So people are finding out more and hopefully doing their own homework to make educated decisions.
For sure. So the four states that have no laws about exotic animals, I know that Texas is pretty, you know, loose. And can you describe like what the current framework is like in Texas and what the legislation that's been proposed would accomplish and what that would look like?
Absolutely. So Texas doesn't ban any ownership of animals outright. They regulate it by county. So each county can make that decision. And so what you'll find is the counties that are, you know, major cities like Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, it's illegal to own them in those city limits. You know, obviously that's understandable because of population, but you'll find in the rural counties, they either have no restrictions whatsoever or they're very limited. For example, Black Beauty Ranch is in Henderson County, and Henderson County requires a permit to own a quote-unquote dangerous wild animal. When this was passed, I want to say maybe 2013-14, we went to the county office and wanted to file our paperwork to say we had dangerous wild animals, and they had no clue what the law even was. We had to educate them on the proper procedure. And ever since then, they've come out every year to do their inspection, but they admit, you know, there's no way to know that. There's no way to track that to prove that there's animals in that county. So obviously, the laws need to be strengthened. So what we're an affiliate of the Humane Society of the United States, and what HSUS has worked on is trying to get unregulated organizations banned. So the private owners that are not licensed by AZA or by USDA or GFAS, you know, that they are not allowed to own these animals. And it's only restrictive for like big cats and chimps. It doesn't even affect monkeys, you know, so there would be no restriction on owning monkeys. It's really those larger animals.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that I've been talking about, and that seems to be a point of that's just constant need for education with decision makers and legislators, is this whole notion of the USDA licensure as a good threshold for exempting somebody from a potential ban. And you know, keep saying over and over that really it almost makes the whole exercise pointless, because the standards are so low, and a private owner can get a USDA license for $30. And there's that whole USDA report about how 70% of people with four or fewer big cats in their inventory actually are just private owners with no intention of exhibiting, who've gotten a license to circumvent a state prohibition that exempts USDA license holders. So, so that's, I think that accreditation piece of it is so important, or prohibition on public contact, as a piece of it too, because that seems like something that will be critical to striking a blow at the whole like breed and dump cycle.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's a start, you know, if that's what we can get past first, you know, maybe years down the line, we can get something more restrictive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a constant exercise in educating in a way that is as in simple terms as possible. Like we had that same big cat that I helped rescue here in Louisiana. Initially, law enforcement had gone to the property. My understanding of the whole story is that law enforcement had gone to the property to execute a warrant on something, and saw the tiger chained in the backyard, but left not knowing that the state of Louisiana has a blanket ban on big cat ownership. And the exemptions are very limited to our accredited zoos and also to our Louisiana State University to keep their mascot. So they left and called the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, and they said, we just left a house with a tiger in the backyard. And the Wildlife and Fisheries had to send them back and say, you have to go get that cat. As police pulled up, the people from the house were trying to load the cub into the back of the truck in what looked like an attempt to, you know, take her to another location. So, yeah, law enforcement doesn't always know like what they're supposed to do.
And even if they know, it doesn't mean they're trained on how to deal with it. I know one thing that BCSA has talked about as well is working with law enforcement to offer training or, you know, advice or being a contact. You know, should you recognize you have to seize an animal, you know, call us, could we come help, you know, or a nearby sanctuary that's a member. Because a lot of times law enforcement, they're not trained on how to deal with wild animals.
Right. You know, my clinic at Michigan State, we've been working on a manual for law enforcement that they could download for free, and with some of that information included, like who to call, the handy list of the reputable sanctuaries, like what the, in very simple terms, like what the law is, so that they're aware and they don't have to they don't have to wonder or just, you know, throw up their hands and be like, well, I don't know, so I'm just going to like leave it or walk away.
Is this the same manual that Tim Harrison is working on as well?
It is.
I think he's, because Tim and as you are advisory board members, I think you guys are working to get BCSA in that manual.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll be continuing to finish that up and get it rolled out. So, I mean, now it seems like it's going to be a timely issue with the way things are going with the economy and the private ownership issue. And there may be more calls about this particular concern. So, but Tim's been a great resource in helping the clinic to get that done. So, because you're right, there's nothing. Like, there's a total void in education and training for first responders who are already doing jobs that are dangerous enough as it is without having to worry about, you know, executing a warrant, going into fight a fire, and confronting a potentially dangerous animal. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today, everybody. I hope that you have contacted your federal legislators and urged them to pass the Big Cat Public Safety Act. If you haven't taken 2 minutes to do that yet, stop, do it right now. It takes less time than you take to brush your teeth. All they've got to know is you want them to pass the Big Cat Public Safety Act. It's something we all can do that costs us nothing, that will help end the chronic abuse, trafficking, and exploitation of tigers right here in the United States. And if you have more questions about accredited sanctuaries for big cats here in the U.S., you can go to sanctuaryfederation.org. That's the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries website, where it has all of their accreditation guidelines and the rigorous standards that all their sanctuaries have to meet. And if you want the full list of big cat sanctuaries in the United States, the best sanctuaries, the reputable accredited ones that are providing the best care, that are on the front lines to end the big cat trade in the US, that are absorbing all of the rescue work and care for animals who are discarded, then go over to bigcatalliance.org. Catch you again next time for more Tiger Talk.